You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Doc, how are you today?
Good morning, Mike.
It's great to see you.
Hey, it's great to see you, too. What a beautiful day it is outside.
You could play nine today if you really wanted to.
I would play nine if I could. If you find enough open grass.
I'm thinking about going to the beach later today.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
In Wisconsin, one of the benefits of living in this kind of climate is your expectations are fairly low. So when things like this happen, you know, we're happy. In Florida, they'd be wearing fur coats and freaking out.
No doubt.
This is great.
Hey, let's, if we can, talk a little bit about Aaron Rodgers to start the show. It came out that he underwent a minor knee surgery. I don't know if there's such a thing.
You know, it all depends on how you want people to think of it.
Right. And it said, they described the procedure as cleanup of an old injury. And I went back, and I know that he had 2004, he had a repair to a torn ACL. So I don't know if that's what they're talking about. But clean up to an old injury, as doing what you do, what does that say to you?
Well, this is what I do. So what it says to me is that he likely has either some meniscus tearing in his medial meniscus, which would be a very common thing to see, especially after ACL reconstructions that were done at that time. Most of those reconstructions are good for getting back to sport, but they were not anatomic reconstructions. So there tends to be a little bit of increased play in terms of rotation in the knee. What does that mean? Well, your meniscus cartilages, which fit between your femur bone and your shin bone, or tibia, we call that, they're like bushings, and they cushion the two bones together. The medial meniscus is the second line of defense, so to speak, after the ACL for rotation in the knee. So a lot of people who had ACL reconstruction, particularly at this time, would end up with some medial meniscus tearing that occurs longer term. So, you know, if he's made it this long at his level, that's actually pretty good. So is it minor? Well, no, not really. But, I mean, I expect that he'll recover well from it. Let's put it that way.
You know, it talks about he's recovering on schedule. That doesn't say anything, I guess, to a guy like me, because I don't know what... I would just call you.
All they're saying is he had a knee scope, he had some cartilage trimmed, and he's doing fine. I mean, that's what they're saying, right? So we don't really know the details of all of that, but that would be typical. I mean, I do this all the time, and most people are fine. And
right.
They get better, and they get off doing their thing, and everything's good. So
what's interesting, he was never listed on injury report all year with anything on the lower part of his body. It was his shoulder and his arm.
It is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, never at all. Hey, the Super Bowl's coming up, and a couple of injuries I want to talk to you about. I want to start with Thomas Davis, who is a really good player for the Carolina Panthers. He's a linebacker, and he suffered a broken arm, an injury that, you would think for the vast majority of people it's going to keep him out of a game, but he's talking about possibly coming in. They say he's had 11 or 12 screws placed in the arm.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like he had what's called a fractured ulna. The ulna is the bone on the outside of your forearm. So there are two bones in your forearm. There's the radius bone and the ulna bone. The ulna bone, sometimes you can fracture it from a direct blow, which is probably what happened, based on the way that the injury occurred.
Right.
And I suspect what they've done is they put a plate on there to stabilize it, and then they're going to put him in sort of a modified cast so that he can go out there and try to play. Now, is that unusual? Well, yeah. I mean, he runs the risk of separating the plate. But I think, you know, when it's the Super Bowl and the guy spent his whole life dreaming of this play, of this game, they may take that chance, figuring that if he does do that, they'll just go in and redo it and he'll have the offseason to recover. So it's a bit of a risk for sure. It's very unusual. If if he had another break, like in the radius or something else, he would not be able to do this. So that's why I think it's an ulna fracture.
You know, he's had three ACL injuries. throughout his career, and he's one of the best linebackers in the game.
Yeah.
So he's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy. And, you know, again, we always hear this macho sort of he's a tough guy stuff. But, you know, it all depends on what the injury is, right? This particular injury in his case, he may be able to get out and play. Now, whether he's going to finish the game and all of that, we don't know. I mean, he's certainly not going to be quite normal with his strength in that hand and everything else. But I think he's probably going to give it a go and at least try to get out there. And, you know, we go through this all the time. If he were a high school athlete and he's playing, I would not let him do that.
Right.
You know, but he's not. He's a professional athlete. He's got a huge offseason, big contract. He's dreamed his whole life being in the Super Bowl. He's probably going to roll the dice and take a chance. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and you can still fix it later.
Right. Boy, if it doesn't work and he hits it just right, that's going to be painful.
Well, it's painful, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's a calculated risk. I'm sure the doctors have talked to him about it. This is not sort of standard of care. So people out there, don't think just because you broke your arm, you can run around and play football next weekend, because
right.
It's not that would not be typical, and your doctor's not going to recommend that. But in this case, they may do that.
A couple other Carolina Panthers that have not participated in practice yet but are expected to play. Jonathan Stewart, running back, has a bum ankle. Mike Tolbert, fullback, and Fuzzy Whitaker, another running back, has an ankle as well. Did not participate, but they all played in the last game, played till the end of the game. So it wasn't like they came out of the game. I think they're just kind of sitting them down to make sure they're 100%.
I think you're right on the money with that. This is a bye week, essentially, right? So they're going to rest these guys up, try to get them as healthy as they can, and then they'll get them out and start practicing. I mean, he's not forgotten how to run. So they just want him as healthy as they can get him and fresh as he can be for the game. So,
yeah, I don't know if anybody 100% healthy this time of year in the NFL on these teams.
No, but I'll have to say that bye week makes a big difference for these guys. It
right.
really does. It gives them a chance. I mean, look at what happens at coming off of a bye. The percentage of winning that bye teams have over non-bye teams is huge because they're week rested. It makes a big difference.
Hey, on the Broncos side, a couple of guys. The one that jumps off the page for me is Darren Stewart. He's a safety. Really good player for them. Had a knee injury, did not participate, and they're not quite sure if he's going to be there or not. I think that makes a difference for that defense, especially when you're going against a team that's starting to roll offensively. My goodness, Carolina's been rolling most of the year, but in the playoffs, they've put up some big points.
You know, this is going to be a really interesting matchup, I think, because, you know, New England obviously was rolling too. And that Denver defense, if it's at full strength, is one of the better defenses we've seen. You know, I don't know if they're quite at the 85 Bears type level. I don't think so. But boy, they're good.
And, yeah, they'll hit you.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really interesting matchup. You know, Cam Newton is an incredibly agile, very strong quarterback. That's something they didn't see, you know, last time. So it'll be a very interesting coaching matchup as well.
And the size of a linebacker. I mean,
he's enormous.
Yeah,
enormous.
He's 6'5", 6'6". He runs. He's huge. Got a big arm. And he's fast and tough. And
so one other thing we need to touch on just briefly is this whole Peyton Manning PED thing.
Yeah, that was our next. I didn't know if we want to go to that, but I think we have to, right?
Well, I think we should. I mean, you know, we are doing a sports medicine show because we talk about these issues, and we don't always have an answer. It's not like I've been treating Peyton Manning and he's been getting this. But, you know, we've seen this pattern before, and that's why, it's almost unfair in some ways to Peyton Manning, and in other ways, it's just the way life is. I mean, did not Ryan Braun stand there and say, I didn't do this? Didn't Lance Armstrong stand there and say, I didn't do this? I mean, we've seen this before.
Correct.
The guy who they used as their primary source recanted much of his story, but there's pretty clear evidence that HGH was sent to the Manning home, allegedly for his wife to use. That's very circumstantial, suspicious evidence. I mean, what would his wife be using HGH for?
I don't know.
The Pittsburgh Steelers team physician got loads of boxes of HGH a number of years ago. That story disappeared in a heartbeat too. Now, to me, if I treat a lot of athletes in my practice, if I get a big crate load of HGH in my office, I think there are going to be a lot of eyebrows raised about why I'm getting that. And when I say, oh, it's for my anti-aging clinic, it's like, what professional doctor of a professional sports team, an NFL team, is running an anti-aging clinic for anyone other than professional athletes. Right. So I don't know. Anyway, I hate to impugn that, but it's very suspicious. And I don't think this story is going to go away. I think they're not going to talk about it a lot because everybody seems to like Peyton Manning and they want him to go out on a high note. And you know what? That's probably fair. My feeling is I think a lot of us rush to judgment on a lot of these things, and that's not fair. I mean, let's just let the dust settle. If he did it, it's likely to come out. I mean, Roger Clemens, you know.
Can I ask you what he would have used it to get healthy quicker?
Ostensibly, yes. I think what people probably don't realize is how frequently this is done. And it's not easy to detect. This is a human analog. This is it's a synthesized by our own genome. So it looks exactly like the stuff you normally have. And so they tend to titrate up a little bit to get to the higher levels. And, you know, there are these clinics in town. They do this all the time. And, you know,
what can I ask as somebody who reads about it and doesn't understand it totally, by using that, it affected him how, if he did?
Well, it can increase your muscle mass. It can increase your recovery time. And it makes you feel like you're younger because you're getting the same hormones that you had when you were a younger person. The problem older athletes have is they don't recover. They can perform. They just can't recover like they did before. I mean, Barry Bonds is a great example of this. He could lift weights more than anyone around because he recovered faster because he was on all this juice. That's what people didn't understand. I mean, I heard people justifying all the time. Well, he works out harder. Well, you're right. He did work out harder. I mean, it's not like he didn't have to work out for it. If you just take HGH and don't do anything, nothing happens. But if you go out into the gym, you can work harder and harder and harder because you can recover faster. That means you're going to get stronger and better. And in his case, in Manning's case, quite frankly, it may have made perfect medical sense to do that.
But,
you know, that's part of the ethics of this whole thing is in a medical situation, if a doctor is prescribing it for recovery, would it actually be unethical? And the answer is probably not. I mean, you know, and I hate to bring it up that way. It's very controversial, I'm sure, but it's not really, not medically, it's not. If you're using it just for performance enhancement, then it's probably not ethical.
Well, we'll keep an eye on the story, obviously. And I think you're right. It's probably going to be asked a number of times this week. And it will not be. I don't think it's going to be the story. I think it's going to be a question, and then they'll move on.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that Clay Matthews has nothing to do with any of this.
Hey, I'm excited. Today's show.
His name may have gotten thrown in there as well.
Yeah, it may.
But I'm sure he's never done anything like that.
And we're not even going to speculate
on
that.
He's a Packer. Packers don't do that.
Packers don't do that stuff. Dr. Aaron O'Toole has joined us in studio. Doctor, it's good to see you.
Good morning. Good to see you, too.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, too.
Yeah, you've been good?
Yeah, all is well.
Hey, we're going to talk concussions today.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk three segments on it because it's – look, I'm really interested in it. The movie came out doing fairly well. And I think it's important that we talk fact to fiction, and we'll hype a little bit the truth, what we should be talking about with this, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you, for people who are listening, who are saying, oh, not concussions again, you're going to want to listen to this show. Dr. O'Toole's here. He's going to talk to us about not only sort of fact and fiction, but also the ethics of school participation with these sports. It's going to be a very interesting next 45 minutes here, so don't turn away. You'll want to listen to the rest of the show.
Yeah,
it's very, very interesting.
I can tell you this, that I'm going to get calls from – we get a lot of high school coaches, parents, players that listen to this show and then listen to the high school show, and there'll be a lot of people on both sides of the aisle calling me after the show saying, hey, I need to talk to him, or I think he's wrong, or boy, I really agree with him. So
have him send us some tweets. We'll be happy to address those things.
Yeah, you bet. Tweet us Sports Med Radio. That's hashtag Sports Med, M-E-D, Sports Med Radio. And we will have Dr. O'Toole, Dr. McCarty, can answer those questions. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Nothing will keep us together. Forever and ever. Oh, we can be heroes.
It's David Bowie, Heroes, brought to you by Dr. Aaron O'Toole, our special in-studio guest. As we start to discuss concussions and you know, the fact fiction, if you want, you can tweet us, hashtag SportsMedRadio, any questions that Dr. O'Toole, Dr. Brian McCarty, my co-host, can answer. Can we start with defining terms?
Sure. I think a super important point, because medical jargon is always flying around out there, and it's sometimes hard to understand exactly what one term is and where that term ends and where the next term begins. So concussion really is an injury to the brain from a force that's delivered from trauma. Doesn't have to be to the head. It can be to the body. But that force results in some injury to the neurons in the brain, which causes them to not function like normal. And that dysfunction then causes the symptoms that we typically think about. The headaches, the vision changes, the phono and photophobia, some confusion, some cognitive delay.
So cognitive delay, I'm familiar with. That's when your brain isn't working properly, and it takes you a little while to process things. Did you notice the pause between when he said that and when we responded?
What's that? I'm sorry.
And then the other terms that Dr. O'Toole brought up with the phonophobia is not a fear of old record players. It's the fear. It's sound. It's too loud. So you it sounds
it's
you
the
have
fear
a hard
of
time
smartphones,
with
smartphones, right?
And then yeah, right. And then photophobia is light. So you're it's not technically a fear of light, but intolerance to light. And so basically, you have a headache. It's like having a terrible migraine. Is like what happens after concussion. You get problems with seeing lights. You want it dark. You don't want it loud. All these types of things. And then of course the dreaded cognitive delay is part of that.
How long, and it depends on the severity of the concussion to how long that can last?
Correct. So very typically, the symptoms will happen immediately after the trauma, but not necessarily. Sometimes there's a little bit of a delay before those symptoms really kind of manifest themselves or show up. But the length of time those symptoms last is really kind of dependent on the athlete and the mechanism of injury.
Do you know, for me, Dr. McCartney, I think you'll know who I'm talking about. The first time I really heard about that with the light and the sound was Altoon. And I thought, what's going on with him? And that's the first time that I remember hearing to that extent. Was Altoon, who played for the Badgers and New York Jets.
Yeah, just for those who are younger, since we're, you know, I don't know. But Altoon was there in the early 80s. He played for the Badgers, was an absolutely outstanding wideout.
A beast.
And
yep.
He went to the NFL, played for the Jets, and just killed it for a few years with the Jets also. And then he had recurrent concussions. And you're right, he had problems with light, he had problems with sound, and eventually had to retire because of the concussion issues. This is way before anybody recognized this as anything as a real issue. And so you're right. That's one of the first times you heard it. Now, of course, we recognize that as part of the concussion recovery protocol, right?
Right.
Is that athletes need to demonstrate they don't have these things.
Yeah, and there's this long list of symptoms that are kind of associated with concussions. They're associated with lots of other things, too, which makes it sometimes hard to diagnose concussion versus not. Headache, obviously you can get a headache from things that aren't related to a concussion necessarily. But so there's a long list of symptoms that can be associated, and we don't always necessarily understand why after a head injury or a body injury that results in a concussive possibility that you get these symptoms. We don't totally understand why the symptoms get worse with light and with loud noise. The mechanism in the brain isn't super clear. But we just know that those are symptoms that people report. And so we kind of measure them and take them as part of our diagnostics.
Yeah, and a severe injury, for people listening, you know, you do get actual swelling of the brain in a really, really severe injury, like a high-energy car accident, for mm-hmm. example. And you can see that, you know, visibly on a CT scan or an MRI scan. And that brain edema, we call that, can result in similar symptoms. So people assume that on a smaller level after concussion that may be occurring, but you can't see it. So it's not as clear. And now in the future, hopefully we'll have testing that'll show these things. But right now, a lot of it's based on symptoms. And this is why Sam Shields, for example, we've talked about on the show a number of times, because he was out for a month with a concussion. And people are like, well, isn't he good now? Like, it's been forever.
Right.
Well, every time he would work out, he'd start getting headaches again. Mm-hmm. And so that, as of our current protocol, our current understanding of concussion, keeps him from coming back, because then we are worried that he's at risk for not only another concussion, but perhaps a second hit injury that could be very serious and result in huge amount of swelling and maybe even death. Very rare, but still something to be seriously concerned about.
I watched, it was a 30-30, something like that, and Julian Edelman, who was on the Patriots, was on, and they talked about a hit that he had taken in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and it was a vicious hit. And he got up and played, and he scored it, in fact, when he touched down. And they asked him, should you have been playing? And he said, yeah. They said, did you have a concussion? And he said, what's that? And they said, a concussion. He goes, I don't know. I was fine. And he kind of laughed about it, mm-hmm. and they moved on. And I'm wondering at that level, if Sam Shields didn't say, look, I keep getting headaches when I'm working out, how do they know?
You're exactly right. And so this is where the debate really happens within the organizations in the NFL or other professional or even high school levels, is that so much of it depends on symptom reporting. And up until, 10 years ago, we didn't really understand the pathophysiology, how it worked, the mechanism. And now that we're understanding the mechanism and the things to look for, we're telling people, you got to be careful. You got to tell us when you have these symptoms. But people's competitive nature sometimes prevents that.
Yeah, and this leads us into an interesting thing that Dr. O'Toole and I were talking about during the break. So you were talking about the number of concussions reported by the NFL last year. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so actually just yesterday, the NFL released their total concussions, preseason, season total, that were diagnosed, and it was 272, which is an increase of about 30% from last year, and which is a little bit surprising at first glance. But I think rather than people hitting that much harder this year relative to last year, I think it actually is probably more representative of the spotters in the NFL and people reporting more because they're concerned about the injuries and the long-term effects of the injuries.
But the problem is here, right, is that we can try to explain away the data backwards, right? But we really don't know. So now they've instituted all these rule changes, tackling changes. Everybody says, oh, it's safer, but you get 30% more concussions. This is a very concerning trend, and this is why, as we get – for people listening, don't go away, because as we get into these next couple of segments, we're going to talk a little bit about the ethics of what we know about it and how that's going to affect decision-making moving forward.
Hey, before we get to a break, and we have to hear in a minute, but the movie that came out, Concussion, has this has spurred a lot of conversations around the water cooler about, look, I've got a seventh-grade son, and I went to that movie, and I'm not sure I'm going to have him play football anymore. Or, do you know what? I saw the movie. I think they're doing things right at the youth level now, teaching my son how to tackle properly and how to run the ball properly, not putting your head down. And so that movie, I think, has really kind of spurred a lot of conversation.
It's moved the goalpost in terms of what our discussions are in at all levels. And I think that's, if nothing else, that's important. You can agree or disagree with kind of the point of the movie or some of the op-ed pieces that we've talked about or the ethics we're going to talk about in a moment. But I think if nothing else, it's stirring the debate, which is an important debate to have.
It's really important. I agree. He's Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Go to mymosh.com if you want more information on him. Really quickly,
yeah.
What made you get into this field? What your interest in this field came
I actually
from?
Did some pediatric neurology research before medical school out in Philadelphia, looking at brain injuries in little neonates that have congenital heart defects and looking at blood flow in those brains. And that kind of started things down this path.
Well, that's great. Again, Dr. Aaron O'Toole, mymosh.com for more information. My co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Obviously, you can get information on him at mymosh.com as well. We'll get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to talk a little bit about hot button issues, and we're going to talk about the ethics report that you had sent over my way, Dr. Aaron O'Toole, and I've got some questions regarding that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan. I got a mouth like an alligator. I want it louder, more power. I'm on a rocket till it strikes the hour. Bang your head. Bang Your Head by Quiet Riot. Brought to you by our special in-studio guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Fits well.
For the record, no pun intended. We would prefer you not bang your head.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. But we're going to have them redo that. Don't bang your head.
Quiet Riot's not going to redo that.
By O'Toole and McCarty.
there you go. We were talking about concussions, and we're talking the medical ethics report in school football that you sent that mm-hmm. we're going to discuss between now and the end of the show was really interesting and a little bit scary for guys like me that have three grandsons and a son-in-law that coaches high school football.
Yeah.
It's alarming, to be honest with you.
Again, I think this journal article put up by two providers in the University of Minnesota addressing the ethical issue of just playing high school sports and us having high school sport, specifically football. And their really take home is that public schools shouldn't have football programs, which is bell ringing.
Yes.
Right?
Sorry, guys, but just so the people out there know where this has come from. There's a journal called the American Journal of Bioethics, and this is where the article is published. If anybody wants to find it, that's where you would find it, so that you can read their conclusions for yourself.
And your feeling, Dr. O'Toole, after you read this,
a little surprising
to you?
A little surprising. Just the conclusion that they're driving to. I think it moves the goalpost and brings up, I think, very topical discussions about very real options to help protect our patients and our kids and our athletes going forward. It's pretty well researched article based on good peer reviewed articles in the literature on concussion. And I think where you decide to draw your conclusion is really the debate, but I think the debate needs to happen.
Yeah, what I would say is that I think they did a very nice job trying to sort out the truth without having the, for lack of a better term, sort of the religious atmosphere of football in America cloud that. So they tried to look at it objectively as much as they could. Now, interestingly, they didn't say that no one could play football.
Correct.
They said that it should be a club sport that has a very specific consent. One of the issues that I've had with collegiate football when all this has come out, just to be honest, is that the mission of our schools is education. And so if you have something that can result in cognitive disturbance, it is anathema to the mission of your university, for example, to have your students do this. Whereas in a professional team, it's completely different.
Completely.
Yep. Because now you're playing a sport. It's just like being a deep sea diver. There are risks that come with that. And if you choose to accept those risks for the financial rewards that come, that's a choice that you can make, and it's an informed choice. But in a university or scholastic setting, that is not the case.
Yeah, I'll quote this paper, and I highlighted this. Private play and private leagues like Pop Warner programs would continue. Young people choosing such programs would play purely for the game and not be lured by the school spirit, in quotations. And so they're not saying, look, we think you should ban football altogether. Right. It is in public schools. Let's make this where if a kid wants to play, have him go into one of these leagues and play there rather than playing for the school.
Right. And they also don't bring up the idea of having thresholds of age for contact, which I think is an alternative way to address this problem. And can the two be melded? Probably. I think the big ethical issue that they have, again, is this idea that student athletes, specifically high school and younger, have, and collegiate athletes for that matter, have a lot of pressure to do the sport. And that influence comes not from themselves, but from school, parent, friends, and they can't make actually the informed decisions, nor may they may not even be capable of making that informed decision. Conformed consent at the time they decide to play.
Yeah, and again, that may be a differentiating issue for the collegiate player, because if you're over 18, technically you can make your own decision. So that's going to be up to the university to decide. But in the high school setting, you're not over 18, and so you can't make a truly informed consent. The other thing I think is interesting is they do outline sort of what a consent form ought to look like for a collision sport. And just to be fair about this for people listening, we're not anti-sports, we're not anti-football, we're not anti-anything, but we're just trying to look at the facts of the situation. For example, hockey, headers in soccer, all of these things fall into the same category. And what we're trying to do at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine is keep our eyes open to how do you make sports safer so that kids can participate and enjoy the great parts of it without ending up with a long-term problem.
Look, I've known you for a long time now, and your love of high school athletics is second to mine, but nobody else's. And you're looking at this from a different angle, and you're saying, look, let's just make these as safe as they can for these kids that are participating. And I would think that would be the goal for everybody, but it's not.
Some people have a vested interest in the sports and in what's happening with the sports. And some people get a little blinded by that because of a tradition of playing these things, and they say there's no problem. But it's not that different than, I mean, the way that this is looked at is not that different than cigarette smoking. I mean, doctors promoted cigarette smoking in the 1940s, you know, and, you know, they said, oh, it keeps your weight under control. And now you look at it and you go, how could that happen? Right. Well, because information changed. But anyone who lived through that information change knows that for years there was denial. Oh, no, it doesn't cause emphysema. It doesn't cause cancer. And now we know that most of the denial came from the cigarette manufacturers.
Yeah,
at that time it wasn't clear. Right. Now it is. So now we have the same issue. Are we going to be encountering this 20 years from now and look like idiots for not having addressed it for this generation or not?
I think the knee-jerk response, and I think this is what I asked people to kind of avoid, is to just immediately respond that this is ridiculous and that this kind of falls into this wussification of American kids, right? It's not about what it's about at all. It's the idea of proposing options to keep people safe,
right,
while still allowing them the benefit of the sport.
Hey, guys, let's get to a quick break. Other side of the break, let's continue our conversation. And it's our last segment with this, and we'll get to the bottom line. And I think everybody's saying the same thing. I don't know if everybody out there is, but we want these kids, if they want to participate in, you know, in athletics, and especially football, and you're talking about hockey and some parts of soccer, it's great tools for life to play athletics. I believe that. But if we can do it safer, we have to make sure that we're doing that. And we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Again, mymosh.com for more information on Dr. O'Toole and Dr. Brian McCarty, who is my co-host. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Brings me back to my pal Joey days. The attic.
You should have seen McGivern dancing in here.
Man, I got
awesome.
Some rhythm, brother.
You were shredding, man.
Ring
it was
my
looking
belt
good.
By Anita Ward. I'm telling you, it brings back bad memories.
You get hit hard enough in the head, that's what you sound like.
Some good memories, but not so good memories. We are joined, our special in studio guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Would you say he is a concussion expert?
Yeah, I would.
Concussion expert.
And it's not from getting multiple concussions.
Not from first-hand experience.
Not at all. And you can get more information on Dr. Aaron O'Toole at mymosh.com. Again, for this last segment, if you've got a question that you want answered, tweet us, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get that question answered for you. Did you guys read the article on O.J. Simpson?
Yes.
Can we start with that? It was, depending on how you feel about the guy, it was a pretty sad article. What's going on in his life?
Yeah, so for those that haven't seen the reports, although it's kind of permeating all of media as a little hot button issue, the pathologist who kind of discovered CTE and has made the connection to head injuries and concussions to CTE was asked about O.J. Simpson and whether or not he thought he had CTE. And his response was essentially, yeah, I'd bet my license on it, which I don't think anybody had really drawn that conclusion necessarily and definitely not said it out loud.
So just for people listening who may be a little bit confused, what happened is CTE is the brain injury pattern that we see with multiple concussions. And what this doctor is suggesting is that O.J. Simpson snapped and lost it and killed these people because he has CTE, and nobody has made that connection before, or at least said so out loud. I think it took some of us a little bit by surprise, but it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Right, and kind of where it came from. I guess one clarification I just want to make sure that people are aware of. So the CTE is a diagnosis made post-mortem at this point. We can only diagnose it when we autopsy the brain. And we also think that while concussions are probably a piece of it, it's probably all of the other repetitive traumas that happen over the course of your career, starting younger, you know, middle school, high school, college, professional, however long you play. It's the repetitive trauma, and part of the concussions can be part of that repetitive trauma. So
in other words, linemen who may hit their heads on every play but don't get concussions from that can actually be sustaining small brain injuries.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
We think that those folks are probably at higher risk than anybody else.
Right.
For CTE.
Yeah.
Question for you, Dr. O'Toole. The data that is being looked at and taken in now, if you could look 10 years down the road, where do you think that side of this will get to? Will we be able to know, how much more will we be able to know in 10 years on concussions and what causes them and the severity and what we can do to possibly stop most of them?
So the huge push right now, the holy grail, if you will, is to try and find something tangible and objective that helps us make the diagnosis of concussion soon after injury. So neuroimaging, right? CT and MRIs at this point can't detect concussion. There's no blood test. There's no specific physical exam finding I can do that says concussion. It's only concussion and nothing else. But that's what everybody's rushing for to find. And there's some promising things out there. There's certain types of PET scans where we're looking at metabolism of the brain. There's certain types of MRI scans that look at metabolism of the brain also that are showing some promise, but they can't be kind of rolled out to the public yet because we need to vet them a little further.
Yeah, there are a number of different issues there, one of which is cost. You know, these are very expensive tests, and so it's not practical to use them for everybody because they're, I mean, like many, many, many thousands of dollars per test. One of the things that I know I've read about is that the so-called PET scan, which is a sort of advanced metabolic scan of the brain, is abnormal post-concussion for ages. I mean, months and maybe years after. It doesn't look normal. Functional MRI or fMRI is another test that may someday be available to the mainstream public, which, again, could be something that eventually will be used. So I think Dr. O'Toole is helping us because he's at the forefront of all the information. And there's a veritable waterfall of information coming in about this. So I think your question, where are we going to be in 10 years, is we're going to be a lot better informed. Mm-hmm. Where we're going to be. My prediction would be I think there'll be continuous rule changes to football. I doubt that people are just going to walk away, nor do I necessarily think they should. But there's a very good chance you're going to see linemen standing up at the line, and they won't be down in a crouch and hitting each other.
No kickoffs.
No kickoffs. Right. Standing up linemen. You know, who knows? But I think that part of concussion can't be prevented, no matter how good your helmet is. If you hit the ground from we saw that incredible catch that Cobb made,
right?
And he didn't get a concussion. He had a lung injury, a chest injury. But I mean, you come down from a height, no matter what your helmet's doing, you're taking tremendous impact load from your brain into your head, into your skull.
Do you know one of the reasons that I love doing this show with people from Mosh is it always seems like you guys are on the cutting edge, and you always have Dr. Aaron O'Toole, who's a concussion expert, comes in, and he is so well versed into this, and when we wanted to talk concussions, you're like, we'll bring in my guy. I got a guy.
We're lucky. We got a bunch of guys.
Dr.
O'Toole is certainly one of our foremost experts. Dr. Terry Young, who's a PhD, he was supposed to be here with us today. We want to have him on here in the next few weeks.
Right.
He's got a terrible cold. He couldn't be here. But I want to talk to him about the psychology part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he treats a lot of professional athletes with these injuries, and it'd be very interesting to get his perspective on it.
Well, it's interesting for me as a guy from the outside, from Mosh, to be able to say, hey, look, this week we're talking about this, and let me tell you about the expert. And then you guys come in, and it's amazing to me just how it seems like you're ahead of the curve on a lot of this stuff, and I appreciate all the work that you guys at Mosh do with this. There's good news. You know, there's we're always talking bad news. I think good news with what high school football in this area and the WIAA has done as far as their rules for practice. A lot of those coaches were already doing that before they implemented those rules, but I think that at least talking to those guys, it's made a difference.
Yeah. I mean, look, the emphasis today, for anybody out there listening who's freaking out that we're saying that no one should ever do anything ever again, is wrong. What we're trying to do is we're trying to provide you with actual facts, right? Not, subjective things, but actual facts. And the facts are we have a problem. The facts are we need to address the problem. And the fact is, as of today, I know for all of our schools, we're instituting the absolute state-of-the-art, safest way for people to participate in these sports that we know how. And we have impact testing to help monitor cognition before and after concussion. We have people on the sideline monitoring the athletes. We've got trainers in the schools getting to know the athletes. We've got Dr. O'Toole and a whole team of concussion management experts to help if there's a question about what to do. So we're definitely, we're moving the right direction.
I think the key is that folks need to recognize that we can provide this kind of multidisciplinary approach to help address an injury if it occurs and help to make a diagnosis of the injury. But it still is very important that people recognize that the injury is out there and that people are comfortable reporting if they think they've got an injury.
Yeah, I think it's important that you don't put your head in the sand.
Exactly. Exactly. When the new information comes out, it's very tempting to say, oh, that can't be true, because it violates what we want to be true. And sometimes you have to look and take a step back and go, okay, if I had nothing to do with this, what would I think?
If I have no dog in the fight,
I had nothing to do with it, right, what would I think? And the reality is, I think what you'd think is, we need to be better. We need to know more, which I think is coming, and we need to be better about taking care of what we know.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really important. Well, boy, this article is a game changer. You called it, you're moving the goalpost a little bit, but as I read this prepping for the show, it's got a chance to be a game changer. And again, it's just one article, but it's really, they did a really good job on it, saying, look, here's what our beliefs are. And again, they're not saying, let's quit football. Let's just take it out of the schools and make it a club sport so kids that want to play for that reason.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, this will just keep evolving, and we'll keep talking about it. We're going to have Dr. Terry Young in soon to talk about the psychology of how all of this works and how do you actually manage with pro college athletes after this happens.
Dr. Aaron O'Toole, thank you. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, as always.
You bet. MyMosh.com for more information. Dr. McCarty, have a good weekend.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
Thanks. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's a high-